From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we begin Ghost to Ghost, our traditional annual program. Happy birthday, by the way, to Roman Spinelli. A Halloween birthday for you, Roman. Enjoy. Here's what's happening. U.S. health officials have now reported 1,888 confirmed and probable cases and three more deaths from a mysterious respiratory illness tied to vaping, taking the total death toll to 37. Now, last week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reported 1,604 cases and 34 deaths from the illness and said the number of reported cases in the epidemic appears to be leveling off or declining. Sad situation there. Veterans saw a spike in urinary, prostate, liver, and blood cancers during nearly two decades of war, and some military families now question whether their exposure to toxic environments is to blame, according to an investigation. The rate of cancer treatments for veterans of Department of Veterans Affairs Healthcare Centers increased 61% for urinary cancers, which include bladder, kidney, and other cancers, from fiscal year 2000 to now. The rate of blood cancer treatments, lymphoma, melanoma, leukemia, rose 18% the same period, and liver and pancreatic cancer treatment rates increased 96%, and prostate cancer treatments increased 23%. Something happening over there in the Middle East. I think a lot of it has to do, of course, with the original Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein started burning the Kuwaiti oil fields. Remember that? I think he gave off some kind of toxic fumes or something, but something's causing cancer there. As we reported yesterday, a Michigan-based company has recalled six popular apple varieties over concerns the fruits are contaminated with listeria. The company's called North Bay Produce at Traverse City, Michigan, recalling 2,297 cases and two bulk bins of fresh apples, specifically Macintosh, Honeycrisp, Jonathan, Fuji, and Jonamac and Red Delicious varieties. Let's check in with our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, first of all, what is listeria?
Well, it's an organism that is hides very easily in these food processing facilities. It looks for cracks. It looks for rusty equipment. It just hangs out in the strangest of places: floor drains, hard to clean locations, filters, cracked and pitted rubber hoses, door seals. Any kind of a crack or crevice, Listeria likes to hide, and it also likes to live in refrigerated environments, so it can live in the refrigerator up to a year.
Now, how in God's name, Jeff, does it get in apples?
Well, again, you know, it can be the water, you know, the situation where the apples are being processed, you know, what kind of facilities, you know, the equipment that they're using. Sometimes in the past we found rusty equipment that, again, is harborage for the listeria to hide. And again, you know, when it comes to, you know, symptoms, it takes usually about from 4 or 5 days to 3 weeks to, you know, show itself. And in the form of either fever, nausea, headache, those kind of symptoms. So if anybody has, and these apples, by the way, were shipped between October 16th and the 21st. So if people feel that they have possibility of concern, they should call CDC or this company, and they can give you further information.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Moments after the House passed a resolution establishing procedures for the next phase of the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump, the White House has now condemned the vote. In a statement, White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham said that the resolution fails to provide any due process whatsoever to the administration, calling it unconstitutional. North Korea has fired away two projectiles that the Japanese Defense Ministry has described as ballistic missiles, risking another international crisis at a time the U.S. has fewer tools to help ease aggression from North Korea. The Pentagon confirmed what it said appeared to be a missile launch, as did the South Korean military there. The Federal Reserve yesterday cut interest rates for the third time this year to ensure the U.S. economy weathers a global trade war without slipping into a recession, but signaled it will leave borrowing costs where they are unless things take a material turn for the worse. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Michael Mish Shedlock. Mish, here we go again.
Here we go again. I checked out the odds on CME. It's interest rate futures. It's how people are betting. And traditionally, they've actually been right. And to a certain extent, the Fed actually follows the markets. The odds for a December cut are about 20%. And the odds of a January cut are about 45%. The Fed would like to pause here. In fact, they've signaled that they're going to pause. But it's all going to depend on three things. Those three things are jobs, housing, and consumer spending. We have the employment report tomorrow. The consensus is for 90,000. That's a pretty weak number. What surprised me about the consensus is they're calling for a loss of 50,000 manufacturing jobs. George, that is a lot of jobs here, and it comes right at the tail end as the GM strike is settled. So, you know, we'll see. But with the consensus number that low, then it takes something worse than that to get the interest rate futures to jump. But those are the three things I'm watching. I suspect, George, that the Fed is going to be cutting again. Probably not in December, but January.
Well, we'll see what happens, Mish. We'll talk to you next week, my friend. Now, I travel a lot and fly a lot, and I hit a lot of airports. And I got to tell you, LAX is a busy, busy airport. My God. Well, listen to this. The Los Angeles International Airport, LAX, has now apologized for unacceptable wait times after a new policy banning Uber and Lyft from picking up passengers at the curb level led to major traffic jams and delays. The new system at the country's second busiest airport requires travelers to take a shuttle to a separate area to meet their rideshare drivers, and a bumpy rollout on Tuesday resulted in just a disaster. Overcrowded shuttles, gridlocks, as well as some passengers waiting more than an hour for their rides. LAX apologized late Tuesday night for unacceptable level of service, admitting that there were long waits for shuttles, congestion on the buses, and then long waits for Ubers and Lyfts at the lot. We'll see what happens there. What a mess. It's a mess either way. A 150-million-year-old sea monster has been discovered in Poland. It's not alive. It was only the bones and fossils of it, but it's still a great discovery. Well, Ghost to Ghost starts next hour, but in a moment, Teresa Argee and Kathy Weber, the Haunted Housewives, join us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, the Haunted Housewives with us, Teresa Argee and Kathy Weber, often considered the world's most unusual paranormal investigators. Their wives, mothers, authors, and ghost hunters. A couple of their books included Haunted Willoughby, Ohio, and America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places. Kathy owns and operates the Willoughby Ghost Walk and is the author of The Haunted Willoughby, Ohio. Teresa is a highly respected speaker, media personality, and author of the award-winning book, America's Most Haunted. And here they are this Halloween night on Coast to Coast. Well, happy Halloween, all of you.
Happy Halloween, George.
Thanks for having us.
In harmony, both of you. That's pretty good. You know, I have to ask you, Kathy, because of the Willoughby Ghost Walk, one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes had to do with a guy in visiting a little town on a train called Willoughby. Is that based on that same area?
Well, the legend does say that he did consider our town, because he did take the train from Cincinnati into New York once a week, and he did pass through our depot, and when he did look out the window, it looked as idyllic as he portrayed it in that particular episode. So that's the legend and the tradition around here. In fact, Rod's wife was in our parade a couple of years, a few back, and she kind of reiterated what I just said, that it was considered as part of that episode.
Such a classic indeed. And Teresa, you two have been the Haunted Housewives now for, gosh, more than a decade as we've been doing this program together. How did you two meet up and team up for this?
Kathy and I met. She had worked with a team that I was affiliated with, and she wanted to continue doing these fundraisers, these paranormal fundraisers. And the team I was with said, well, Teresa would probably love to do that with you, because they were really busy, and we were way on the other side of town. So I showed up where Kathy worked at her regular business. This is before the ghost walk. And she just thought I was a little nutty, because I'm like, you got to come ghost hunting with me. And she's like, no, I don't do that. I'm a historian. I don't go ghost hunting. And I kept showing up where she worked, and I showed up at the ghost walk, and I just kept showing up until finally she said, okay, listen, the only way I'm going to get this woman to leave is if I actually go on a ghost hunt with her. And I took her to the Mansfield Reformatory, Ohio State.
Oh, Reformatory. Yeah, that's a haunted place.
Yeah, and she was hooked after that, and we've been the Haunted Housewives ever since.
And what are some of the strangest things, we'll start with you, Kathy, that you two have encountered as the Haunted Housewives?
Well, because we've been together for so long and done so much work with paranormal research, we have encountered all the big ones, if you will, Christmas for a ghost hunter, we call it, like apparitions, full-body apparitions, disembodied voices, disembodied footsteps, being touched or even hurt while on an investigation. So all of those type of strange things have happened to us, so we really have a lot of information when we're speaking to people because we had those firsthand experiences.
Teresa, how about you? Scariest thing for you two as you were doing your thing?
I would have to say the scariest thing would be being touched. It's such a different thing that happens when you're actually physically touched by something. When you see something or hear something, you know, there's always that little kernel of doubt. Is this just in my mind? Am I imagining it? Did this really happen? But when you get physically touched to the point where, you know, your body actually feels it, it's startling and it can be very scary. And for me, it happened at the Ohio State Reformatory. And I was so taken back by it and so shaken up by it, it kind of changed my entire view of the paranormal. It was more than, wow, this is cool and interesting and fun, to this is really could be dangerous. I really need to think about this. And it scared me because that particular incident, I wasn't hurt per se, but I could have been.
What is it about Halloween that all of us jump aboard to do these strange and unusual things? What is it about this moment?
Well, I think it's an exciting thing to those of us who are into the paranormal or the unusual. I mean, this is exciting because it's kind of acceptable this time of year.
Yeah.
So we spend like two whole months really celebrating because it's not an embarrassing thing and no one runs around thinking you're crazy. But, you know, Halloween is fun for everybody. And for us, it's an exciting time of year because what we do is almost like upheld as something special, even though the rest of the year we really don't think it is.
And Kathy, tell us about the Willoughby Ghost Walk. What exactly is that?
The Willoughby Ghost Walk is a tour through the downtown Willoughby, Ohio area, and it encompasses a couple of blocks in our little historic downtown. We travel to all the sites, or the most popular sites that are haunted, because the whole darn town has stories. But we visit, like, the cemetery, and we hear some of our great historical stories that also have a supporting ghost featured in each story.
And, Teresa, with this time of year, of course, tell me your thoughts on what ghosts really are.
Well, my personal theory on what ghosts are, and I think there's a couple different types of ghosts they call, I think that they are something left over after the physical death of a person, something that remains, some sort of energy, almost like a residue or an echo, but it's a residue of energy or an echo of energy. I think that at times it can actually have our personality. It's not just energy. There's something about it that contains our some sort of brain activity that we had. So something that makes makes us as a person. I think that's what these intelligent type hauntings are, where we see a ghost that we can, or experience a ghost that we can interact with, something that we can respond with in a communication session, such as EVPs. I think that is part of us that has remained. I do think that there's also the type that is just an energy echo kind of thing, when that would be something that doesn't interact with us, a residual haunt that just, no matter what we're there to experience or not, it continues. Like if somebody sees the same spirit every day at midnight walking down their hallway, but it doesn't respond to them, that is a residual haunt. The other type of intelligent haunt that we can communicate with is part of our personality. I do not believe that it is a stuck spirit, like a soul that's trapped here on Earth. I don't believe that personally, but I do believe it is some sort of energy that's left over.
And with this energy, in some cases, we have seen these apparitions on video or on pictures, films. They get captured by tape or by photographs. How come? How does that work, Teresa?
I wish we knew exactly how that works, because we're always fascinated, especially when we get EVPs. We're like, how did that happen? They don't have voices in boxes to make these sounds, but somehow our recording devices are picking them up, either picking up a sound wave or picking up some sort of a heat signature, some sort of energy. And I don't know why, but I think just because it is a form of energy that we can't see, that one day I think science will kind of prove that there is something there. When Kathy and I collect EVPs, we'll re-record them on a device where you can actually see the waveform. So the device doesn't know the difference between a ghost voice and a human voice, and it actually picks it up. Even though we're not hearing it with our ears, the electronic equipment that we use is somehow picking up some sort of sound wave. And I don't know how that works, but I find that utterly fascinating. I think science will be able to figure it out one day, at least partially, of what it is.
Kathy, what about your thoughts on this?
Well, much like Teresa, I believe in almost everything she said about what is a ghost. It's something that is left behind. And I think many times when we interact, there's more to the story. So this energy that we're interacting with, which we don't know if it's Tommy or Joe or Steve or whom it might be, we are still interacting with something. So we can't all collectively have lost our minds and think something's happening. As far as the spirit photography, again, I agree with Teresa. So many times I'm skeptical enough to say that could be this or that could be that or this might have happened. So there's so many reasons we're getting that residue or that anomaly on a photo or in a video. But then you see it with your own eyes, and you can't say, I can't believe, when actually it's there. It's not that you can't believe, but you surely can't always explain.
Teresa, is there an area of the paranormal you don't like to handle and you prefer to stay away from?
Yeah, I really would shy away from anything that could be demonic, because I do believe that there is some sort of demonic type of presences out there. I don't think everything that is claimed to be demonic is demonic. I think there's just some nasty ghosts out there, some mean people who passed away and the residual energy left over from them is still nasty and mean. But I do believe that a very, very, very small percentage of these paranormal encounters can be demonic. And I am not well enough equipped to deal mm-hmm. with that, nor would I want to risk having anything like that attach itself to me or bring that home and expose my family to it. So Kathy and I will shy away from demonic cases. But, you know, half the time people think it's demonic, and it's not. But why take that chance? It's not worth it. As mothers, we don't do that.
Have you ever been a witness to an exorcism?
I have never witnessed an exorcism in person. I have seen... I've seen them online. I've seen videotapes of them. I've witnessed somebody who thought that there was a demon affecting them, but I disagreed with it. I did not believe that. I also witnessed somebody who thought that their child was being possessed by a demon, and I think there was just some sort of mental illness going on inside the family that made them think that their child was having issues, when I think there was definitely a doctor's involvement needed to figure that out, because it wasn't paranormal at all. And that was kind of scary, being in that situation. I'm not equipped to handle that. they needed a doctor, not a ghost hunter.
Well, we're going to come back in a moment here with both our special guests, Teresa and Kathy, and take your phone calls. Ghost to Ghost begins next hour, but your calls are next. And Ghost to Ghost begins next hour here on Coast to Coast, so get ready for your ghost stories. I want your great ghost stories, things that have happened to you. Maybe a dearly departed person has just visited you, and you want to share that story as well, but we will be doing that. We'll have special guests popping in and out, and, of course, your phone calls make the program, so we'll be doing that next hour. We'll be taking calls with Teresa and Kathy now when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Teresa Argy and Kathy Weber, the Haunted Housewives. And, Kathy, how about a website for you two?
The Haunted Housewives are found on hauntedhousewives.com. And make sure it's wives, not wife.
There are two of them.
Yes, we are. We are two together. And also we have the willoughbyghostwalk.com. And you can find both of us on Facebook and the Haunted Housewives on Facebook as well.
What do hubbies say about the Haunted Housewives?
Well, my hubby thinks, he wonders when I'm going to start making it rich. He's looking for that steady income that comes with being a ghost hunter.
Nah, that doesn't happen unless you're Dan Aykroyd or something like that.
Exactly. So, but he's pretty supportive. I mean, he kind of plans cute vacations, and I know he must love me because he'll say, honey, this is a haunted hotel. So he does support me pretty well.
How about you, Kathy?
That was Kathy. This was Teresa.
Okay. Yeah, Teresa.
Well, my husband likes to say that there's a whole lot of haunted, but not a lot of housewife in me, especially during the fall. So he's as supportive as he can be, but I think he thinks my little hobby is quaint and cute, and he's wondering when the big bucks are rolling in.
is there anything dangerous about doing what you do? I mean, I know you both mentioned, you know, you'd like to stay away from the demonic end of this, but I mean, is there a physical danger to what you do, Kathy?
I think there is. You know, I had heard about attachments and things like that can be dangerous, and I was fairly glib or maybe naive about the whole concept, but then I did end up having a problem a few years back, and I understood that it you know, in this line of work, you're always going to these strange places, and sometimes I think we're somewhat careless in what we're doing, and I did indeed become, you know, have a spirit hanging out with me for quite a while until I had to take measures to make sure that I was free of his influence or his, you know, part in my life, because he didn't belong in my life.
Exactly. How about you, Teresa?
Oh, yeah, I think the attachment issue is real, and it can happen. And it's not just an emotional thing, although it does affect you emotionally. I had an attachment once from a residential case, which was really a very benign case, it seemed. There was nothing particularly interesting about the case that made it stand out, except for the fact that afterwards I had this attachment that kind of infected me with a bad luck and nightmares, and I was hearing things, and my personality changed. I was physically ill for no reason. It was real, and it was horrible. And after that, I was never nonchalant about it again. Like, it might seem harmless, but you're always taking that risk. And at that time, my children were very young, and I just thought, what if this carries on past me to my children? Because it was affecting my family. It was affecting my sleep. It was affecting how I was behaving, my personality. It really did have a negative impact on me, and not just my emotional state, but my physical well-being as well. So besides being actually physically touched, like getting your hair pulled or being pushed down, or like Kathy had been pushed down several times in one investigation, and he had scratches down her back in another investigation, it can really, it definitely can transfer over to the physical world, and it that's scary.
Teresa, though, what's your rush with this? There's got to be something that keeps you attracted to this.
My attraction to the paranormal, even after all these things, it's the utter fascination of the unknown, of not knowing what's what a ghost is, but knowing there's something there, and of course the appeal of actually being able to communicate with a past loved one. And we've all lost somebody. We've all lost somebody that was very close to us, and to think that they could still be with us, even if it's just in spirit, that is very uplifting to me, and it keeps me going. And honestly, to believe, it reinforces my faith that there is something after this life here on Earth, that there's something more, that we keep going, that we don't just die and rot in the ground, because I think it's a very sad state of existence to think that this is it. And I don't really, my heart breaks for atheists, honestly, to think that they don't believe in, they don't have to believe in religion or an organized religion, but to not believe that there is something after this life. I think it's a very sad life, especially for people who have a tough life. So the appeal to me is that, the reinforcing of my faith, the knowing that I can, that there's something else, and the opportunity to communicate with our loved ones and people that have passed and to learn from that.
Let's go to some of the calls. Randy is in Bristol, Virginia, to get us started, east of the Rockies. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Hi. Hello. Good evening.
Hey.
I got two short stories for you. They really happened. And the first one is, there's a motel in Washington County, Virginia, called Skyland Inn. I rented a room there one time, and I woke up at about like 3 o'clock in the morning one time, and I felt... What woke me up was something like touching me, and I just laid there with my eyes closed, and I was thinking, I'm going to open my eyes and see what this is touching me. I popped my eyes open real quick, and there was a hand, just a hand with no body attached to it, and the fingers was like playing with my lips, and about like 2 seconds later, it was gone.
Jeez.
It just vanished.
Ooh.
Was it one of those hands with long fingernails, or just a normal hand?
Just looked like a normal hand, but there was just a hand floating through the air, and it was levitating in the air, touching me. And I mean, then it didn't scare me. Why it didn't scare me then, I don't know. But now it gives me like chills down my spine.
I bet Teresa, in Randy's case, the first thing you think about is the guy's having a horrible dream. But it doesn't sound like he was dreaming.
Oh, my gosh. That's so creepy, Randy. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you would think it was first a dream when you're startled, especially when you're coming out of that dream state. But when you realize that you're fully awake and you can feel that grab, that touch, that has got to send shivers down your spine. That sounds horrible. That would scare the crap out of me, especially just waking up in a hotel. Oh, my gosh, Randy, I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, well, we both are. Thanks, Randy. Appreciate that. Let's go to Paul in Boston. Welcome to the program. Paul, you're on with us.
George, good morning. Good morning, ladies.
Hello there.
Good morning.
My dad was a First World War Navy vet, so he had a couple of particular sayings that no one else used. And I was an insurance adjuster, and I had an appointment 70, 80 miles from Boston. And I'm driving down the main highway. There's several other main highways that break into it. And I wanted to go down the Route 24 down to the Cape, and actually to Bedford. And I took the wrong turn. And I started arguing with myself, you know, what a dummy. Now it's going to put you an hour out of place because the roads off this main road are lousy to cut over. And I heard my father's voice as plain as day. And this was a little two-door coupe that I was driving. And he said, go visit your mother. And I'm arguing with him, so to speak, saying, I can't. It takes him down an hour or turn around and everything. And he says, go visit your mother, you bitterly beep beep. And I said, oh, that is the boss. So I go down. It's about 40 miles. I go down, I visit my mother. They had a storm 2 weeks before, and she lost half the electricity in the house because one of the wires was pulled out. My wife and my sister used to call her religiously and talk to her every night, you know, alternate nights. She never said a word to us. The neighbors never called. The visiting nurse never called, you know. And there she was for 2 weeks. So I got some extension cords and got the refrigerator running for her. And then I called an electrician friend of mine who called the Edison, and they had her back. And, you know, by 5 o'clock that night, they had her all back together again.
That's great.
But that really was, there was no question, that was the old man.
Yep, he was up there doing his thing. Paul, thanks for that story. Appreciate it. There are so many stories. I mean, you can write books and books and books about this. Teresa, tell us a little bit about your work.
Well, my work is very intertwined with Kathy. There's very little that we do without each other, which is wonderful. But we like to experience the paranormal from the historic side. So, yeah, Kathy has the ghost walk, and I work the ghost walk, and we do investigations. But normally we will target these historic buildings because we're really involved in historic preservation. So we don't do a whole lot of residential cases anymore because we found them very problematic, on occasion. But we are committed to finding these gems, these historic little gems, these buildings or institutions that are in danger of closing because of just age or no one's interested, and finding a paranormal angle and bringing them back to life, so to speak. So that is kind of the basis of our work. We really enjoy doing the research and learning about history and finding the stories of these people and places that came before us, and then kind of explaining it with a ghosty angle. You know, we can always find a haunted place interesting and make that an interesting place for people to come and visit or to start donating to the museum. So that is the basis of kind of what our mission statement is as Haunted Housewives. And then also we're always writing and researching, working on another book, working on our next project. So that keeps us going. That history hook is what keeps us going.
And super.
That's kind of the basis of our work.
First-time caller Chris in California is with us. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George, and good day to the ladies of the Haunted Housewives.
Hi.
Hello.
So I have a theory about what ghosts and apparitions and what we think our spirits could be.
All right. Share with us.
I do a lot of studying with a lot of things with the Sumerian texts and some of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. I know that you had a couple of really good talk shows in the past, you know, with some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, after reading the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, where it actually talks about that we have worlds within worlds and that we live in several different dimensions, it actually states that there is 9 known dimensions to man that's above and 14 other dimensions. But we have multiple dimensions altogether, and there could be up to 14 of them. Even science these days is starting to figure out, yeah, we probably have multiple dimension realities. So what if spirits are nothing more but these entities that's on a different level or a different dimension or a parallel universe? And what we're seeing is where we on our side think, oh, we're seeing a ghost. But on their side, they're saying, oh, we're seeing a ghost. But it could be nothing more than just us peeking into another realm or dimension.
That's always that possibility. Kathy, what do you think of that?
Well, I've never studied the Sumerian texts, but, you know, he said it from a very intelligent point of view, but he has a similar viewpoint as mine because I believe there are layers and layers and layers, and for some reason, every once in a while, one of these veils is thin enough so that we can glimpse them or they can glimpse us. And as he said, are they living in an alternate reality in another world at the same time as we're living in our world? And we're just trying to go back and forth to communicate with each other. But we call it communicating with the dead because, again, it's something we don't understand. We were released from our physical bodies because they no longer served us. But I think we go on. We're going on somewhere. And is that the other realm where we can glimpse them and they can glimpse us? We can interact a little bit. I don't know if we'll ever understand it, but it sure is fascinating.
Well, it sure is. There's no question about it. And taking religion out of the equation for a moment, you know, in their thoughts on what death is, what do you think, Kathy, death is?
I do think death is a release from the physical body and moving ahead into the next life. I think that there's freedom in spirit. I think when we're released, you know, like we're never going to really know for sure. I believe our soul goes where we believe it needs to be. And I believe the rest of us goes to Target or Bermuda or wherever it wants to go. So I just think that, you know, it depends on you and your personality and how strong it is or how much business or how long you want to be connected to the actual physical world. Some people, I don't know when you have that release, if you really want to look back. I think some move forward, and I think some, they want to remain attached to our physical world. And that's good for me because then I have something to do on Friday and Saturday nights.
You sure do. Let's go to David in the state of Maryland. Hi, David.
Hi, George. Longtime listener ever since the old RFL days.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. I have what I think is a perfectly logical and scientific explanation for ghosts.
All right.
The ancients believed that the soul, the ka, the chi, whatever you want to call it, was a form of energy. And physics, particularly science, teaches us that energy cannot be created or destroyed, only altered. So if the soul, the ka, the chi is a form of energy, it can't be created or destroyed. That can give you an explanation for ghosts. And also, I'd like to know what your guests feel about past lives and reincarnation.
All right. Let's start with you, Kathy.
I believe in what I want to call the renewal of souls. I am, you know, my religion is Christian, and I believe in a higher power. I believe in God, and I believe that my way is a certain way through a certain man. But we all have different beliefs. But I do believe, as your caller said, I believe very much that it's similar to what he had to say. So his idea is probably spot on for me.
Teresa?
Yeah, I think past lives and reincarnation is a fascinating topic. I, too, am Christian and was raised in a Christian religion where, you know, we have our one God and that's it. And actually, not really too keen on other religions. That's the way I was raised. But for me, all religions, I think, are very similar. I think they're all right in a bit, and they're all wrong a little bit, and we don't know. But the idea of reincarnation, my Catholic faith doesn't really believe in that. But I personally think that there has to be something there. I've just heard too many cases that cannot be explained, and I do believe, as the caller said, the energy cannot be created or destroyed. So the physical body dies, but we are still energy, and that energy has to go somewhere. And who's to say that it doesn't just enter into another body? I mean, there's so many interesting cases about reincarnation and past lives that cannot be explained. That's why I think science one day will be able to explain the energy part, that what happens, that there is a transfer of energy, or maybe it is just another dimension that we can't see now, but someday physics will be able to figure it out. But there has to be something to it. There are just way too many cases that cannot be explained. So I don't know. I've done past life regression once, and, you know, it turns out my past life, I was kind of a boring person in my past life, too. So I didn't turn out to be a queen or live in a palace or anything like that. I was just another kind of everyday average citizen. But, you know, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. I don't know. I can't prove it or disprove it, but I find it fascinating, and there has to be something there.
Have either one of you ever been accused of being doing the work of the devil?
Oh, yeah, Kathy's a witch. Kathy.
Yes, I have quite a few. As I told you, I have a Christian-based community, and, of course, I attend a church. And after I started the Willoughby Ghost Walk, a very entertaining historical walk through downtown Willoughby with ghostly haunted tales, I was walking through church one morning, and somebody I knew stopped me and said, "What are you doing here?"
Yep, that's what they thought. That's what they thought. Well, thank you both, the Haunted Housewives. Up next, Ghost to Ghost.